Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What is going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week. Before we start, I have a new record out called The Hymn. Go check it out on Spotify. Also, if you're listening to this, make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Give us some comments in the comment section or wherever you're listening or watching this from. And now it's time for podcast. Chris Lake, don't really need to give him much introduction. Had an insane career over the years, and especially in the last 6 years, has kind of gone to extreme levels. Good friend of mine and great person. Loved this podcast. It was like super chilled. Without further ado, Chris Lake. And we are live. How's it going, mate?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. I just did a podcast about an hour ago, and Detroit's getting like really fucking hot today. Like, we're at like 35 degrees, and my studio doesn't have AC in, so I'm just like sweating. Yeah, it's fucking
hot. Cold then, though.
It was cold when you came in, wasn't it?
It's like, good to be back.
Yeah, there's like no extremes. There's no like middle ground here, though. It's like either cold as fuck or really hot. It's just not the best.
Is it good to be back?
It's interesting to be back. There's like pros and cons to it, right? It's great because I'm working again and we're back touring, which is obviously, I'm sure you're in the same situation. It's the best feeling ever.
Sure.
But then it's also that I'm not spending time with my family that I've spent for the last year and a half, and like didn't actually get to see any of my mates in the UK because of COVID and all of that. But hey, it's like the things you got to do as a DJ.
Yeah. And it's surprising. It's like, I guess most people didn't expect for the amount of time that we would have to spend away from our normal lives and routines. It was all, for such a long period, it felt like a couple of months. We'll add a couple of months on. Before you realize that you're a year and a half deep into a new routine, doing all of these new things. And it's like, it's not just an adjustment to getting back to what life used to be, but it's an adjustment from leaving the life that we've just been in for a year and a half.
Exactly. And I don't know about you, but like, I somehow got really busy in lockdown just doing other shit. And like, just say, for instance, like the podcast, like I'm doing this like twice a week, And like then adding that into the schedule of writing music and touring and doing everything else is just like, and other thing, I started like a cooking show, like just like loads of little stupid things that you kind of add to your diary because you've got all this free time. And mm-hmm. then you're like, how do I now have to fit all of that into my schedule that was slammed beforehand? But it, hey, it's first world problems. It's the best thing to have. Like being busy is great.
Yeah, you'll figure it out. You'll figure out. I guess you'll figure out which ones of those things are the most important to you that you're going to fit into your time.
Totally.
So this might be the last podcast you ever do. Yeah.
Fucking last one. Game over. Cheers, Chris. number 71. We're out. What about you? How's life with you?
Well, I feel like I'm back into the swing of things now. To a point, I'm back in the swing of things. Touring is less of a how do I put this? I have less apprehension about the touring now.
Yeah.
It felt really weird. It felt really weird for me, the thought of going back to shows, being around people, and entertaining people, and being a focal point of attention in a room.
Yeah.
As well, it's like it's just little things. I found that a little bit weird.
It's kind of overwhelming as well, isn't it? It's like everything relies on you to bring out the best A game, and especially now it's like at this moment in time it's a lot of people's first shows back, especially you were touring a bit earlier than some of us, and some of your first shows were people's first shows back ever for like a year,
and it really felt that way.
I
think that it did add to the pressure a little bit, but it was, look, it's not the hardest thing in the world. I'm not trying to make out like this is some really major problem, but it was, I do take it seriously that it's, I play a part in giving people memories. Like these nights end up being major parts of people's memories in their lives. And a first show back after a major event, it's not just a major event for me. It's a major event for other people. Yeah. I take that seriously. Mm. And when you're out of practice, when you're a little bit unsure about you know what you bring into the table, how fluid you feel with like your skills
and how to use a mixer that you've never used before because they
it's little things like this that I found a little bit strange. Yeah. Then on top of that comes in the classic I'd call it overthinking of an artist. Oh, I've been off for a year and a half. We've spoken before this podcast. I've not worked really. I haven't done a lot of studio work. Mm. I've not been that active in general as an artist. I've had family stuff to deal with, so and that is what it is. That can't be changed, but the reality is I'm not coming into these shows with like
an ammunition.
It's just the most unbelievable array of music that I've produced that I'm so proud to show the world. I think a lot of people would be shocked how little I have. It's just like, and that adds to my stress because I know that people have an expectation that I'm going to be making lots of records, trying out new things, hearing lots of new stuff, and I just didn't feel like I was bringing a lot of that to the table. But, so that added to a lot of the stress about how it was going to go down. Are people still going to dance to my music? Are still people still going to vibe to it? And then before you know it, you stood up, there's 10,000 people, and you're like, oh fuck, I've got to go for it.
Yeah.
So
also I think all of that is just self-pressure that we put on ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I don't actually think anyone is thinking that at all in the crowd. They just want to hear your biggest hits. They want to have the best time with their friends and whoever they're with and party.
Yeah, and you soon realize that
there's
just a reality to it. But you know, there's a reality to the things that I'm overthinking before the show.
Mm,
the pressures that we put ourselves under.
How much pressure do you put on yourself on like ticket sales and things like that?
On ticket sales?
Yeah.
I do care about it.
Because you're doing big shows now.
Yeah, sorry, I'm getting a little notifications from how do I turn off? There we go. I do take it seriously because take the time that we're in right now. There's we know that we haven't DJ'd for a long time.
Yeah.
If all the DJs haven't been playing, all the promoters have not been promoting shows, yeah. All the equipment companies have not been, all of the auxiliary industries that go around what we do, they've not been working either.
Yeah.
I do take it seriously that, you know, these shows are big. There's big money involved in putting on these shows. There's big risks. Yeah. Someone's assuming those risks. I want to do whatever I can to make sure the show is successful for everyone.
Totally.
So that's not just making people dance. It's not just making the people that are there enjoy it. It's just making sure that it works for everyone, that I'm delivering what... This just sounds like a really boring chat, but it's true. I take it, I do take it seriously. I don't want people losing money on a show that they put on to book me after 18 months of not making any money.
Well, I think at the end of the day, it actually... If the show was bad, if these shows were bad, then you're not going to be doing shows that big again, and then people are going to be disappointed, and then it's...
Well, that's the other part of it. Yeah. That's the other part of it. So it all plays into the same thing. I don't think the job's done once the booking's confirmed.
No, I always get worried. It's the first thing that I'm like, great, we've got this show, headlining this show. And then it's like literally 10 minutes after, it's like, how the fuck are we going to sell all those tickets?
But
I guess if you didn't...
This is where you're only as good as the team that's around you.
Totally.
And this is where having the expertise of... your agent, your manager, and people around you, where they can gauge what you're actually capable of taking on.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of the pressure can be taken off. That's where it's key to make the right decisions about what shows you're taking on. You've got a good team around you. You've got a great team around you. I know your team. So
yeah. My manager's better than yours, mate. It's fine.
Love it.
Oh, that's gonna go on forever as well, isn't it? Yeah, man, it's so fun to be back though, isn't it? It's like the best feeling.
It is. It's nice to see. It feels different as well.
Yeah, it does.
You can feel this difference in the energy of people. There's like this it's like people are letting go in a different way. I feel really in tune with that.
I think for me I feel like gratitude from so many people as well, like, because from the people paying to see us, like, I feel so like they give off so much like appreciation for us actually doing what we're doing, and kind of I think that's, and like, same with promoters, and like there's, I've done shows for promoters that are like so happy now, where you go back 2 years ago, this was just a walk in the park for them, and this is what they did every weekend, and I think
part of the routine.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Well, when Fish and I did the show in Arizona,
was that the first one back?
That was the second one back for me. That was the first one that we did together. Yeah. It was a big statement show for sure. Yeah. It was, because it was the first, I think that was the first major event back in Arizona.
Yeah.
So then, it was one of the first major events back in Western United States.
Yeah.
you could tell because people were traveling like it was the first show back from in the Western United States. And the thing that shocked me was how visibly emotional people were getting.
Yeah.
But there were, you know, I saw maybe five people visibly like well up when talking about the shows coming back. And you could tell that it, you can tell how much it meant to people that they had this, this opportunity to forget normal life. And this is what, this is one of the, I think this can be one of the forgotten parts of nightlife, but this is a huge part of, this is a huge part of what we do. It's just like, it's kind of escapism. It's just like forgetting about everything else.
Yeah,
you being literally, on the dance floor and forgetting everything. So it's almost like it's similar to going to a work when you go and do a workout. You know, when you go and do a workout, you forget. Well, if you're doing it properly, you're forgetting about everything else.
Yeah.
And nightlife should be like that too. And it's a pretty bloody good feeling. And I like contributing to that. I like making people giving them a reprieve from their 9 to 5.
Well, I think that's the thing is like. We all have issues going on in life. We all have things that we don't want to deal, have to think about. Mate, you just spilt your protein shake on your
Actually, dude, holy shit!
Bit of nip juice. Hey,
let me go clean this. 2 seconds.
All right, mate. But what I was saying is that it's just amazing to just be back and have.
Wow, I did a number on me, didn't I?
Yeah, you proper did. Currently waiting for Chris to clean up the protein shake he spilled everywhere.
There we go.
It's a good look, mate.
Whatever.
I think we all have issues. We all have things going on in our personal lives and in our work lives and everything, and just being able to have a place to escape and get the fuck out of what we're used to really and what we kind of have to deal with every day is kind of perfect.
That's the best thing about it all, be it all coming back now, and you can tell that there's just a huge appetite for it. So
I'd love to have done like a survey on like how happy people go like before the show, how they like feel like mentally for like maybe like the month before the show, and then what they are like when shows are back for like the next month after, and see actually how much difference it actually made.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, it has to happen. I mean, there's just no way it's not a positive effect on people. There's just no way. People have too much fun.
Totally.
Too much fun.
How's
maybe too much fun? You know,
yeah, maybe the hangover's gonna come down to the day after, aren't?
How did you find your first shows back?
Amazing. The LA show was unreal. Like,
that was day trip, right? No, Factory 93.
Yeah, Factory 93. It was like I haven't been nervous for a show like that. The last time I was nervous was when I played Coachella for the first time, Doolab stage, and that was like. Maybe 3-4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 4 years ago. And I was like shitting it then, but this was different nervous. This is just like the first 30 minutes, I don't think I looked up. It was just like straight head down, just do what I do and work out how to use this mixer.
Because you had that internal nerves and fear that if you looked up, you would see something that would throw you into a negative tailspin because you saw that people were not reacting the way that you'd hoped they'd react, and that would just ruin it for you.
Yeah, for me, it was more so because Pioneer sent me a mixer.
Ah, you had the V10 issues.
Yeah, I had the V10 issues. So they sent me the
V10. It's a great mixer, but it's a hell of a learning curve.
Yeah.
It's a completely different style of mixing.
They sent me the mixer but a week before lockdown, and they sent it to my Detroit address, and obviously I was in the UK. So I was like, oh, God. And then they had the 3000s that I'd never even touched.
They're not, the learning curve's not as big on that.
It's pretty
that,
quick.
That's more
yeah,
like,
yeah.
That was more like the, it's that, that's more like the iPadification of the CDJ.
Literally, yeah. So I was like, for the first 30 minutes, I was like, I'm just going to fucking work out how to do everything and then get my nerves. And then the 30 minutes in, I was like, okay, we're good. And now I can look up and kind of read the crowd and try and enjoy it.
Oh, hi.
It's like 5,000 people in front of you and you're like, fuck, how? But it was great. And we did Elro last weekend in New York, and that was just unbelievable.
That was at the Mirage.
Yeah, it was literally the week after you did Mirage. Mm-hmm. How was yours there?
I
love Mirage. It's probably one of the best venues in America.
Yeah, I mean, I saw some pictures and videos of. I mean, what Elro does is it's unbelievable.
It's a proper party, isn't it? And I think that's they've done what I feel kind of was lost a little bit in the industry, where it was kind of turning more and more and more and more about the DJs rather than the actual party side of things. And Elro came in at the right time and just was like, no, we're just going to throw a party and just make it crazy again.
Yeah, there's an element of a show to it. Yeah. It takes away the attention from the stand, you know, from the adoration.
Yeah.
The DJ.
Can you remember Manumission back in the days in Ibiza?
I never went there, but I know of it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of the similar sort, a little bit more X-rated, but like it was more about the show that was going on rather than the DJ,
which
it was great. It's just adds something different to the kind of dynamics of a club, really.
Yeah, but I think that venue's special. It super. Really is special. Did you have any rain issues or anything?
It rained a little bit during my set for like one song, and then Dennis came on, and then it rained like practically all of his set.
So Dennis
Ferreira.
Okay.
So yeah, it was. I don't think it affected anything though. Why did you?
Yeah, well, we had thunderstorms getting quite close, and I think if it got within, I can't remember the mile, but 4 or 6 miles, then we would have been shut down.
Because the night you had that, I was supposed to be playing in Philly, and it got cancelled because of thunderstorms.
Yeah, there was a few shows around New York that got cancelled. We got lucky. The rain stopped about 10 minutes before I went on. I didn't have a drop of rain during my set. It was bad for all the opener. It was bad for all the acts before me, but I got lucky. So, but I don't know, man. It's just, that's a special venue. That's one of the that's one of the best ones in America. So
totally agree. That and Space, maybe.
Yeah.
Just both iconic venues that I love.
Yeah, Space is epic too.
Yeah, so. Have you done that recently?
I played that a couple of weeks ago.
How did you do it?
I played that a couple of weeks ago.
Oh,
it was great. And I've been unfortunate because I played it just before quarantine, and then once when I came back here, and I've been so unlucky where I've had to actually. Do you know what I played? The first time I played it was right before I did the back to back with Fish. At the Mirage in 2019, and I had to, you know, because of course you get the opportunity to play a much more extended set, and I had to leave because I played right up until I had to, like, the last minute I had to go to the airport. Yeah. And then the gig a couple of weeks ago, I had to do exactly the same thing to get the last possible flight to get to a pool party in Atlantic City.
It's such an awful did you sleep beforehand? Did you get sleep? Yeah. So you went in at like 5 a.m. and then played till.
Yeah, I think I went in. I think we went to the club. I think I went on like either 3:30 or 4, and I think finished about 8.
Nice.
So, yeah. And then, of course, you can go on a lot longer, but
Yeah, I purposely booked my flight at like 8 p.m. the next day. So
that should have been a dream. I mean, having said that, you know, it's maybe better that there's like a
stop.
There's a stop time because I don't know. I mean, I just really wonder if I ended up going way longer. I wonder who is this for? I just wonder, is this really for the fans? Or is this just me for me to go, oh yeah, I played loads of hours in space. Great job, Chris.
It's purely for our ego. That's all it is.
Yeah.
But it's still
no one wants to listen to my shit for that long.
I'm sure there'll be a few stragglers at the end. There's always stragglers at the end. I never forget during WMCs and doing the Dirty Bird party there back in the day. Well, I say back in the day, it was literally like 4 years ago. The stragglers at the end were just, it's probably like 50 people on the dance floor by the end.
The club demons.
Yeah, and you're just like, you're in a whole world of bother. Yeah.
Then pulling those faces.
Yeah, those classic.
Love you, Will Clark.
But the stupid thing is we were all still there as well for no reason. Like, why do we stay there for that long? We're not, it's that FOMO. We're not going to miss out.
Yeah. I don't know. The weird things that we get that happen in clubs.
Have you done any after parties this time round?
No, fuck no. No. Listen, I'm happy to be back, but I'm not saying that we're fully back to normal. All right. So, there's a couple of things that I'm struggling with.
Okay, what are these?
One, photos. It's like, I get it, we're back and we're kind of like almost post-pandemic, but fucking hell, come on, it ain't gone. And you like photo, you know how many times have I told you about fucking dick hands at clubs, you know, when everyone's wanting to shake your hand.
Yeah.
Chris, we love you. They shake your hand and like it feels like the hand's just been in like a tub of water from sweat.
Just sweat.
And it's like, you know that, like, come on, me and you, we've been into the bathrooms. You know how guys go to the toilet. They go to the urinal, they take a piss, they don't wash their hands, and then they come and shake your hand. Dirty bastards.
We've all done it, though.
Any of them. I don't know. So that bit, I'm definitely doing less of the, like, you know, less of the photos, less of the, you know, going to, I used to, like, every show I'd go to the front of the crowd and take photos and sign things and stuff. I'm doing less of that just now.
I've moved to fist pumps.
Honestly, I just don't feel that comfortable with it.
Yeah.
So
I've moved things to fist pumps. It kind of feels a little bit more hygienic.
Yeah.
But it's probably bullshit.
Yeah, I don't know, but you know, I'm sure that'll change. It's just maybe not the. I'm doing. You know, I'm just trying to be more careful. I don't. You know, I still. You can still catch it. I don't want to catch stuff and have to cancel other shows.
Well, I think that's the thing that I've been more so worrying about is that, like, a lot of people around me have got COVID again, or they've been vaccinated and got it, and I'm like, I don't like. I'm trying to do the maths. If I catch it on the Saturday, does it mean that I can go to the show the next week? Like, I don't really know. And it's like, I don't want to be in a situation where we have to cancel shows again.
Well, exactly. So, you know, that's why kind of, you know, I'm sure a lot of people maybe watching this or listening to this is just thinking, what a fucking dickhead taking that attitude. But I couldn't give a fuck. Fuck you. So it's like, at the end of the day, I'd rather have the ability to play the shows and make people dance and sacrifice that part of it until it feels safer. Overall, you know, I am being careful, though.
I think you've got to be, like, again, we can't be in a situation where we do another year and a half off. You just physically can't do it. Like, it's just not viable. And I think if you still got to take the precautions. Like, I fucking hate wearing a mask. Aeroplanes on a mask. Wearing a mask on an aeroplane.
I'd love to see you wearing a mask. I bet you look like a right dickhead with that beard popping out.
I look like a right dickhead. And the mask doesn't fit because it doesn't go under your chin. So I look like, you know those pretty much look like Claptone in a black beard, in a black mask. Because it's just this, like,
you know, your beard is that fucking big. You could wear Borat's green fucking hammock thing, you know, where the bollocks go. That could be around your chin.
Who's Borat?
Are you kidding?
Borat or Borat?
Borat, whatever. Same thing. I'm now pitching you. Is it like, what's it called? The Mankini?
Yeah, the Mankini, wearing that.
Just tighten, shorten the straps a little bit.
Yeah, give it a go. Yeah, I fucking hate wearing a mask on a plane.
Big beards, and they definitely look weird when they're wearing the mask.
Yeah,
it's not very comfortable for me, but I mean, you know, whatever.
It's what it is, I guess. But
I actually had an idea about this. I was thinking about this the other day.
Dangerous.
I haven't Googled it yet, so I haven't done my market research, but now that everyone's having to wear masks all the time and it's summertime, you know, you're probably noticing this now that you're here. Mm-hmm. You're wearing a mask. It's hot. You're sweating. We need face deodorant.
Does your face smell?
I'm not saying it smells, but it sweats. We need face antiperspirant.
Yeah, but it's good to sweat.
For masks.
It's healthy to sweat.
All right, but you know, how would you feel if someone said that about their armpits? You'd be thinking,
mate, I'm fucking sweating out of every orifice right now, just sat in this studio. It's fucking disgusting in here.
Anyway, yeah, so face deodorant.
Face deodorant.
That's the next big thing. That's $1 billion.
Have you heard of the Claw deodorant?
No.
It's like a deodorant that you put on and it literally stops you from sweating. Like 100% stops your armpits from sweating.
Really?
Yeah, but it makes you sweat everywhere else even more. So it's like kind of a bit counterintuitive, but...
Yeah, it doesn't sound too good.
Seems to work if you don't want to get sweaty bits. How's things going with the label? You've been consistently putting music out.
Great. Yeah. Really happy with how we've just kept things going during a pretty uninvigorating time for dance music. You know, the big thing that was stark for me, starkly obvious for me during the time away from events was how damn important these events are for our music, for promoting it, for moving the scene forward musically. It takes, I think it takes invention and new ideas being tried on floors to make things move forward. Because, like, in my opinion, like in dance music, this is probably one of the most stagnant times creatively over this, in my opinion, in the last 18 months for dance music, or anyway, dance music, most of dance music that's on my radar. And I feel like I've noticed not a huge amount of change musically.
Yeah, I think what's happened is people held off so much on their releases, and they're like, okay, now we can put everything out. We made...
Exactly. So, and I completely understand that. But for me, for the label, we didn't hold back. We just kind of like kept going and took the attitude of, well, I completely understand why everyone else is holding back, but let's just keep going
like normal.
And I feel like it was for the benefit of the, you know, we tried to make the most of a bad situation, and I'm really happy with what we did with the label. And but yeah, it definitely wasn't what we had planned. You know, I had a lot more plans with events and and helping develop artists through touring, which is at the end of the day what most artists want now. Manager, I've got this on like do not disturb. I don't even know how
he's calling. It's because he's called you like twice.
Are you really desperate to get hold of me? I'm on a podcast right now.
Brett, piss off.
Here you go.
See, my manager doesn't call me halfway through a podcast. It's fine, mate.
Yeah, exactly. That's some half-assed shit. He's got my diary. He never knows what's going on in my diary.
He booked it in.
Exactly.
Touring and help bringing artists on.
Yeah, you know, it's I'm just now going back to the plan that I had, you know, 2 years ago.
I was going to say, when do you think you'll be back to, like, that plan? Because I know, like, a lot of it's catch-up at this moment in time, right? And it's kind of regrowing things, and kind of a lot of DJs can't, that you had on the label, aren't necessarily in the US and can't travel and things like that. And
yeah, it sucks. We're just, you know, just trying to just do what we can, just focus on what is in our control. You know, I'm lucky as well. We kept, we didn't lose any team members.
Yeah,
we kept everyone on. That's been a massive, massive benefit.
Yeah.
A massive benefit. I can't emphasize how lucky I feel to have all the people around that I've worked with for, well, most of them predominantly for like the last 5-6 years. And I think it was having that kind of thing, retaining that infrastructure for the label, for my management, for bookings and everything, that allowed things like the shows that I came back to. I don't think they would have happened if I didn't have the team that I had. I wouldn't have been able to take them on. There was just too much work involved.
I think that's the thing that you kind of take on as a boss, really, because you're at the head of the kind of you're pushing all of this forward, but the team kind of make it happen.
I just want to do good parties, make it happen.
But no, but like I think there was a lot of labels, a lot of people that just let everyone go at the beginning of lockdown because they didn't have a clue what was going on. But
I get that too.
Totally. I financially, like, I totally understand. I wouldn't want to be paying everyone's wages for God knows how long and not knowing when it's going to come back. I totally get that. But I think what you've done is you've been very consistent during the lockdown with the brand and kind of changing things up. So going really hard on merchandise, like for a period of time but maybe you wouldn't have done that beforehand, if you know what I mean.
Well, I don't actually think the focus would have been, I don't think people would have noticed that, you know, when you've got more going on, you've got less opportunity to focus on one thing pushed. But yeah, we didn't have much else going on. Truth be known, I didn't work that much during, you know, like I said, I didn't work that much during the whole of lockdown. My team helped a lot of things keep moving forward in the absence of me not doing shit.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I did have records from before. I finished up a couple of bits. I think that the only stuff that I really worked on, I did the finishing touches on the Armand EP, but most of that was done. It was just finishing touches. So, you know, just back and forth with Armand to try and get that wrapped up. I did the Mian remix, Josemont re-edit. I didn't do much. I didn't do much else.
Yeah.
I don't think did I release anything that I wrote last year? I don't think I did. I mean, honestly, even now, I'm still trying to warm up writing the way that right into the standard that I hold myself to. It ain't happening right now.
Yeah, I was just talking on another podcast. I wrote so much during lockdown that I'm the opposite. When now I'm like, I have to take time out because I want to not write the same shit that I've been writing for the last year and a half. And this is like the first time in probably my whole career that I haven't written music for myself for like easily 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it's strange.
Enjoy it though.
It's strange, man. Where did you get to a point where you're like,
you know, you're probably re-upping, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of
We didn't stop releasing at all, like throughout the whole of it. And it definitely dropped off streaming wise, but.
But I think a lot of that's down to people, the change of people's behavior. I mean, like, honestly, is our music the best stuff to be listening to when you're not going out? Fuck no.
I didn't go on Beatport until the 2 days before my first show for the first time in the whole of lockdown to buy music.
Yeah.
Sorry, Beatport. Yeah,
I have a to-do list that I run off, and you know, that's like my life. Just live by just ticking off things off the to-do list. Have the most important thing at the top. Make sure you're clearing it off. Yeah. That's how I stay productive. At the top of that, organized record box. I had that for 18 months.
Still not done.
Did I do it? No, I ignored it every single day. And when I went back and I did that first gig, by fuck could you tell that I had not organized that record box, because shit was all over the place. It was horrendous.
I've got really bad OCD. So as I do it, I organize it. So I opened mine back up and I was like, wow, it looks pretty good. The thing that I had an issue with was the USB sticks. I didn't have enough memory on the USB sticks. So then I bought bigger USB sticks that still, I was just being right stingy cunt and didn't get the expensive ones.
Wow, they're so cheap now as well. It's crazy how cheap they are.
Yeah, but I got like
were really taking stingy to a new level.
I took stingy to a new level. I got 500 gig, but the write speed, the write in time was like
500 gig. That's huge. Yeah, kidding?
My record box is like 300 gig.
Ah.
Yeah, I travel with all of my music all the time.
Really?
Yeah, just in case I do. Just in case I do space sets for 12 hours.
Just in case you do space sets for 12 days.
Yeah, literally. No, because I always play stuff from like 2014.
Go on your record box. Go down the bottom. Tell me how long it says. You know, doesn't it tell you at the bottom how you played all the songs continuously, how much time of music that you've got? Was that iTunes?
No, I think it does. The collection. Let me log in.
I want to know.
No, it doesn't.
It's an iTunes thing, isn't it?
Playlist, 241 gig. 163 lists.
Are you playing WAVs or MP3s?
Yeah, AIFF.
Okay, cool. Well, that's a bit better. Yeah, because I'm the same, and I think I'm like 120 or something. Yeah.
But yeah, I bought these shit USB sticks, and on the first show back, it took so long for them to load, and I was like, oh my God, what have I done? Like, my music's not going to load. So then I had to, I play off a hard drive now, like a SSD hard drive, and it's game changer.
An SSD one?
Yeah, absolute game changer.
Yeah, I've heard they're really good.
Like, it writes, you know, like when you have to do record box for the first time on a new USB stick, it takes ages and you're like all day long.
Is it like this one?
Pretty similar to that, yeah.
Yeah. I just got this backing up.
But it literally took like 10 minutes to put my whole record box on the hard drive, and I was
not bad.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that first upload is pretty horrendous.
Shit, but
the USB.
Yeah, it's good, man. It's good. I'm so fucking sweaty. It's ridiculous. What's what have you got coming up then in the future?
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
That's a great question, Will. What do I have coming up?
You just announced your Shrine show.
Do you know what I'm doing? I'm intentionally doing a fold here so then you don't see the stain.
Mate, we saw it when it fell and everything.
I know, but you know, if you're doing a clip or whatever, you'll never know. So what have I got coming up in the future? I've got a few shows. When's this going out?
2 weeks.
Okay, cool.
A week. You just announced the Shrine show, right?
Yeah, they're redoing the Shrine show.
Are you doing mostly big shows, or is it? Are you doing club stuff as well? Yeah, the beginning is
no. It's really great way to not be stressful. You know what though? I've been so lucky. I've had a really, really good run of shows. I've been like, you know, going from having massive apprehension about what people thought about my music, if there was ever any connection to it anymore, and if people would still want to come see me, to now going and doing these shows, it's quite a swing, because I definitely I had major question marks over myself.
How does it my music, my how career. Does it feel like from, because I'm just thinking, like, I know you, well, I didn't know you personally, but I know your music from Changes days to then the like more EDM days to now what Chris Lake is. How does it feel to have like done, like, you've almost had three careers as Chris Lake?
Well, I feel like I could have done it a much easier way. You know what though? I'm proud of how it's all turned out, because you know, I tried really fucking hard to make it work and try and figure it all out, you know. I would say there were two periods of time where I was getting it right. The beginning and now.
Yeah.
And then in the middle was a period where I was not getting it right. And I would put that down to, well, there's a few reasons, but firstly, the reason that I put it down to, and it's like you talked about it, it's like the EDM days. So when I first came out to America and I started getting like more drawn into like big room stuff, then, and this is the way the scene was going, everything, like loads of genres and stuff just stopped working, and the EDM thing just took over. And it coincided with a time where I was losing confidence in what I was doing. I was losing confidence in where the industry was going. And most importantly, I started listening to other people's opinions about what I should be doing.
Yeah.
And that was the worst thing that I ever did in my career, because it's the only time I ever did it in my career.
Yeah.
And it's the only period of time that left me with feelings of regret. Essentially, a regret of decisions that I made and what I did. And I can't really say that I fully regret it, but I don't regret it. It's definitely like, I definitely could have made better decisions at the time. But I got influenced, and I allowed myself to be influenced. That's completely on me. And but the key was I recognized it pretty quickly and was determined to change that. So I think that was about, I don't know what year it was, but maybe 8 years ago. I think it's maybe 8 years ago. I just decided, you know what, I can't let where I'm at be this kind of like musical legacy that I have and how I get remembered.
Yeah.
So I looked at it like, fuck, how am I going to, you know, I'd had big records as well. You know, it's sort of like, how the fuck am I going to change the perception of me and who I am? Now, don't get me wrong. If I was producing under an alias, I would have given less of a shit. I would have just been like, fuck it, drop it. I made a cock up of it. I'll start something new. And here we go. But
it's your name.
It's my name. Yeah. I am my real name is Chris Lake.
It's the same for me.
I care mostly about what I think, but I do care about what other people think in relation to what I've created.
Yeah.
You know, it's a reality. You know, I do want people to enjoy it. I don't care if people don't like it, but at the end of the day, I want to feel comfortable that I still would like things to connect. And I realized that the only way that I was going to change the perception of me was just to like claw it back to figure out what the best parts of me were, how to present it to people in the best possible way, do the best possible job of, you know, making music and getting it to connect, and also somehow get it to be more popular than the stuff from before.
Yeah.
And it was really hard. And I definitely got fortunate along the way, but this is where, you know, my team comes in as well.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Brett, the guy that was just calling me, you know, I just started working with Brett, when we round about that period when I decided that I need to write this ship, you know, write the direction of the ship. And, Brett and I spent months and months just trying to understand each other and be on the same page and understand what, you know, how do I put it? Just try to get an understanding of what I can do, what I should be doing, how I should be approaching things, what my goals were. And then we got to work, and it was a fuck ton of work. One of them was getting out of a record deal that I was in, a major record deal. That took many years. That was really quite difficult. But then I got out of it, created Black Book, and that's when things really took off.
Yeah.
That's when things really took off. Around the time I released Operator.
Operator, yeah.
That was a real turning point for me.
That was a turning point for me, for you, where I was like, oh shit, Chris is back doing what? Not what I knew.
Connected.
Yeah. And it was like, oh, I haven't heard from Chris for years, but this is a big statement piece.
Yeah, and it worked, and then it was just able to build off the back of it, afterwards. And but the key thing was, and this is something that I never really had before that. I felt like I actually had like a much better connection with my fans and with my audience. I felt like I understood them better. I understood who my audience was.
Yeah.
I never really had that before.
Why do you think that was, though?
I think it's just a difference in the times. I think I looked at things a little bit different. Social media made a big difference too.
Massive.
Just seeing instant reactions to what you're doing. Hearing what people are saying about you.
But your social media was big before.
It was different though.
Yeah.
It was different. Take this for example. I toured in Brazil for years. And, but in Brazil, the social networks that were getting used out there were not the social networks that were getting used by in the West.
Yeah.
So I had no idea what people were saying about me. I don't know. I had no idea how much people were saying things about me.
Yeah.
I had no idea what was going on. The only thing that I knew was when I spoke to like the promoter who, you know, could read a couple of things and, you know, give me a bit of feedback and say, yeah, you know,
they like it.
People like you or something.
Yeah.
That's all I knew. That's basically it. A summary from someone. Mm. But I had nothing to read. There was nothing to get. There was no stats or anything, nothing to gauge. I didn't have any understanding of my fan base. But there was little things that, you know, the little things that changed now, like, you know, Brazilians using Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. But this is the key one. The translation button.
Yeah.
Being able to actually physically just click a translate and see what people are saying about understand what your audience thinks and what they're
Do you read all your comments and stuff?
I read some. Yeah. I don't read all of them, but I see what people are saying. You know, after shows, I'll go on and have a look at, you know, what the feedback is. And,
yeah.
You know, like, see how much people are calling me a cunt.
It's the one thing that I think that in our kind of industry, because like I listen to like podcasts with comedians and stuff like that, and they get so much shit from people online, and I don't know about you, but I very rarely get any shit from anyone. Maybe like one or two occasionally, but it's very minimal.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty lucky. I mean, for the most part, it's pretty good, you know. I think I get the odd really bad one.
Really?
I do get some pretty bad ones. Really? Honestly. Yeah. I've had some horrendous ones.
Go on, like what?
Death threats and stuff like this.
Really?
Yeah. You get some like heavy shit stuff said about, like, you get some heavy fucking shit. It's horrible. But it's not as often as you'd think. Yeah. Well, not as often as good comments. But there's some fucking horrible people out there.
Oh, there are.
Some real problems.
They're wankers, a lot of them. How did you find it coming, moving to America from being from the UK and like shit like that? Because you've been here a long time now.
Oh, it's easy, mate, because we're English and we know everything.
You're Scottish, aren't you?
Yeah. What's that?
You're Scottish, aren't you?
Don't you start. I'm English. I'm English, but I lived in Scotland. So I lived in Scotland for... hang on, but let's go back to that last comment. Yeah. I was evidently joking.
He wasn't. We'll twats.
Yeah. How was it adjusting? Well, I've been touring out here for a little while, so I had some familiarity with it. And I came out to LA and did a few like test stays, should we say. You know, I did like 3 weeks, six weeks, 3 months, and then ended up coming out and moving properly. And I loved it.
Yeah.
You know, the big thing that I like about the big difference that I like with America, and you'll understand this. I think we've talked about this before as well. What's the best way to put this? Whether it's true or authentic or not, in America, the words that are said to you are predominantly glass half full.
Yeah.
There's a lot more positivity in the words that are said.
Yeah.
Whether they're authentic or not, that's another question. But, you know, when you go and have a conversation with someone and they've said nice things, you walk away and you're like, oh, they said nice things. Feeling and it leaves great. You feeling a lot nicer. In the UK, and this isn't the rule, but I would say more often than not, we're a little bit more glass half empty.
Yeah.
Quite a pessimistic bunch. Quite, and in particular in music as well, very opinionated.
Yeah.
And it can feel quite negative. And I felt the negativity. Maybe I'm just a sensitive soul.
No, I feel that.
But I liked the positivity and the vibe of the people in the scene. Mm. I fed off of it. It made me feel good. And I like feeling good more than I like feeling bad.
Yeah, totally. Do you still, because I don't know about you, but I still feel like I am like, oh, of course I'm a foreigner. But like being here, even like every time I get to a new city, I'm like, this feels like I don't know how to really explain the feeling, but it's almost like I'm on holiday all the time. Like I live here and I go to the gym, but even going to the gym feels like I'm on holiday because it's not England, if that makes sense. Do you get that feeling?
Yeah, of course.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's America. This is the shit that we used to see on the movies.
That's it, isn't it? Although when I went home, one of my sister's kid started, said to her, said to my, my sister, we need to take the trash out. And I was like, you absolutely have to stop talking like that. You cannot. And I was like, how did you even learn that? Because we don't say trash in the UK. And he was like, YouTube.
Yeah. My niece is 9 now. And I can't believe how American she sounds. Mm. She shouldn't. Like, where she lives, you should have most horrendous accent.
Where are they living?
In the northeast of Scotland. Like, it's proper, like, proper rural, and, you know.
You need the
translation. Her dad's accent, my brother-in-law's accent is challenging.
You need the Instagram. you need the Instagram translation button next to him. All the time.
It's heavy. Yeah. It's heavy. I understand him, but I think my wife, she kind of understands him.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's difficult. But anyway, yeah, these, I think that American media, it does influence.
Definitely.
Western kids.
It's funny when I tell people to watch, Americans to watch Peaky Blinders on Netflix, and they're like, I have to fucking put the subtitles on because I can't understand them. I was like,
watch Peaky Blinders so you can sound like Chris Lorenzo.
Don't, people, it's the worst.
You know, have you noticed that? When was the last time you spoke to Loz?
I haven't spoke to him since June last year. I've spoke online, but not in person, yeah. Not on the phone.
He's been he's been out here for 2.5 years now.
Yeah,
and if you remember, you'll remember like the thing that he would always say, "Trust me."
Yeah,
trust me. It's like it's a proper Brummy thing. Like Jack Grealish says it all the time. Yeah. The Aston Villa player, and he stopped saying it. He stopped, like Gida has him saved in the phone as "trust me," but he's actually stopped saying it since he came out here. So, and wow. Now he goes, "Wow, wow,
so American."
Yeah, he does all these little he's picked up all these Americanisms. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, when I went back home and now came back here, I've had friends where they're like, "Your English accent has got so much stronger than what it was like." When they initially knew me from living out here. And I guess it does. You just being, I've been in Somerset as well. Like, it's not the most intelligent people around there. It's just.
That won't make the cut.
No, not the most intelligent sounding people. Let's use that one. But yeah, I don't know. Do you miss the UK?
I'm still thinking about that last comment you made. Yeah, I miss my family. Mm. I miss my family and, you know, friends and no, I don't miss the UK. Mm. I'm not particularly. I love visiting it. Yeah. I can't say I miss it. I don't really miss it anywhere.
No, same, yeah.
I love visiting. I love being British and
being part of it,
and just that just how fucked up it makes us be, you know. it just makes it difficult for Americans to truly understand us.
Yeah,
let's be honest, because we just say something and they're just like,
is that a joke or what? Huh? Yeah,
really, are you serious? Yes,
very serious. Yes, talking of Brits and Chris Lorenzo, what's going on with Antiope?
We're being the slowest at finishing up an album. It's pretty much done.
Been pretty much done for about a year and a half, though, mate.
Well, no, not really. No, so we were meant to write it the beginning of last year. Then COVID hit. Loz was. He's a mile and a half down the road from me. And I only started seeing him a couple of months ago. Mm. So, because we had to fully isolate here. Because we had a, you know, an immunocompromised relative. So, we've only really just got going. But, you know, we're not really going. Like, in the studio, it's not... We've done some stuff. We're happy with it. But it's... we're not firing on all cylinders. It's definitely not turned out the way it should have.
Yeah.
But But whatever, it'll be done when it's done.
There's no rush, I guess.
There's no rush. There's no panic. I'm not sweating over it. But I will say this. I am really proud of what we've done on the project. So I am excited for people to hear it. Just
yeah. Some of the stuff that you sent sounded great. Especially the one with Scion from Audio Buddies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
We've mixed that now, so
yeah.
It's feeling a bit good.
It's a nice feeling, isn't it? Because when you've written something that's not what you usually write, really, it's kind of a little... It's not Chris Lake music, is it?
No.
Festival.
And you know what? It might be what makes it successful, or it might be why it just never gets off the ground. I don't care though. I'm happy.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. I think you're in an amazing position where it doesn't have to do well. You can just purely be an insular artist and just concentrate on making fucking great music for that project.
Yeah. The thing that Loz and I say is like, you know, we're lucky that we both have really strong solo careers, and we do this project not because we need to, but because we want to. And that sounds like you'll get this because you understand the industry, but like just that statement there is not as common as you'd think it should be.
Yeah, totally.
A lot of people want things to be successful because they need it to be successful.
Yeah.
And you'll make very different decisions because of it, you know? But if you don't, if your needs are from something else, for Loz, it's from the nourishment of the creativity and like the connection to what we're making. It's a pretty unbelievable place to be in my opinion anyway.
So, I think for me, it was like the best. It was that turning point for me when I realized like I have to actually just enjoy what I'm doing rather than look at how to make money out of this. And what do I need to do to make money? It's like, well, hang on a minute. Let's actually just write music I enjoy. And then if I make money out of it and it's successful, then sweet. But I think when I had that mindset, that's when it became the most successful.
Yeah. Probably because it was, without you realizing it, the most authentic as well.
Yeah, totally.
No.
Not trying to write bangers.
Well, yeah, and that leads me back to sort of the way that I approach things with when I kind of when I went back to the drawing board essentially with my career. And that's what it was about. It was about my connection with the music first. You know, like this is the thing. I see a lot of people talking about artists playing their music and, you know, stopping playing their music when once it's released. Mm. Fuck that.
Fuck no.
Fuck that. You know what? I'm not ashamed to say it. I love my music. That's the music that I put out. I'm fucking proud of it.
Yeah.
I'm proud of it. If I'm putting it out, I'm proud of it.
You're proud of the music right now that you're putting out.
Yeah.
And what about the old stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I'm proud of most of my stuff. It, honestly, even like the, I'm proud of all of it.
Mm.
I am proud of all of it. It's like some of it's not as cool as it should be. But I'm proud of what I've done. So,
because for me, in particular,
say like the last 8 years.
Yeah.
No, I'd say the last 6 years. Okay, I can pretty much go and play any song that I've produced in the last 6 years and play it at any of my shows and feel like yeah, I did a good job on this.
Yeah. Yeah,
no, I like that.
Because for me, it's like there's certain music I've stopped playing that I've produced. Like my old Dirty Bird stuff, I don't really play that. And it's not because I don't like it. It's because it just doesn't fit with what I do anymore. But yeah, I could probably...
It's just like a lot of my stuff as well. You know, a lot of it doesn't fit. But then sometimes I'll be playing, I'm like...
That's when I need to play it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
And when it works... Because no one's expecting it. It's actually a really great feeling. Because it's what people want to hear at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I don't mind doing that. And it's, you know, so I think, you know, with that said, I've been thinking about this a lot. I just wonder if, you know, I'm still a DJ.
Totally.
I feel like less of a DJ than I once was. Because the truth is, you know, I will play my own stuff. I feel like a huge proportion of my set kind of explains itself to me. Yeah. You know, there are songs that I'm definitely going to play in my set. So it's what I feel around it. And then sometimes that leaves me feeling like, am I just, you know, I'm less of like the DJ. I used to go and turn up and play maybe one or two of my songs.
Yeah.
And that was it in a 2-hour set. And I think if I did that now, With the expectation that I've built up with my crowd of what I will do, that I am prepared to play in my own music, I think I'd get fucking lynched.
I think you have to. I think it's true. It's not, you don't go pay the rock, you don't buy a ticket to see the Rolling Stones and then play a bunch of Beatle records or a bunch of Bob Marley records, although that would be fucking great. Like, you just, that's not what you pay for. If you pay to see a Chris Lake show, you pay for Chris Lake music. You don't pay for anything else.
Yeah, and I like doing it. And I you know what? I kind of it's gonna take years and years and years and years of playing those songs to even catch up with the amount of times I've already heard those songs anyway. Mm. And I've managed up to this point listening to those fucking loops over and over again. I think I can cope. You know, still listen to them for the next few years.
I agree, man.
I remember this. I remember when I, going back to that, the old record changes. I was out in Australia, and I was on tour, and I was with Sebastian Legere.
Legend. And, I love his stuff now as well.
Yeah, he's really hit his stride on this new stuff, and I just remember dropping changes, and he just turned to me and he was like, you know, you're gonna have to play that every single set for the next 5 years. and I remember when he said it, I was like, I don't know how I feel about that.
Mm.
But now I kind of like, I don't know, I don't mind, because like, I'm making music I'm truly happy with.
I think DJing has
truly happy with changes as well, but like, you know, not the vocal version, but the instrumental I was.
What's wrong with the vocal version?
Well, that was a whole.
Is that a major record label thing?
Major record label. That was my first major record thing, and I got
done over.
No, I didn't get done over. At the end of the day, I just, you know, I was young and impressionable, and. And you'll remember this as well. Back in that period, strong instrumental records would get revocaled.
Yeah, yeah, all of them.
No, not that doesn't really happen that much anymore. But like,
well, because there's not really many strong instrumental records that do well nowadays, as they used to. Like, most of the records that do really well have a vocal.
So that's what happened. You know, I just got pressured.
When was the last big instrumental record? Rebuke? Along Came Polly?
No. I've got no idea.
Tenals. Before you got cancelled.
For being a prick.
Yeah. It's fair enough, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But it's, you know, it was a different industry then. But anyway, that was 15 years ago.
Yeah, I remember. That was a while ago.
Well, you see, for British people, they'll remember that song for being the song on Sky Sports Football.
I didn't know that. I never watched football. Was it on there?
Yeah, it was the. It was for the. I can't remember. Yeah, it was just basically the intro music for a whole year for the Premier League football.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty epic.
Yeah, that's amazing, dude. We just did an hour and 10 minutes.
Sorry.
It's fine. I would go on forever, but I'm fucking so hot in here.
I can actually see the rosiness in your cheeks.
It's really hot in here. Let's wrap this motherfucker up. Thanks for being on, man. Really appreciate it.
Easy. Nothing easier than talking.
Exactly. It's the best. When will I see you again? That's a famous song, I think.
That one, the fucking the festival in
Elements.
East Coast Elements. Yeah. That's where I said the one with the fire.
I've never played that show. I've never played that one. Should be good fun.
You're going to have a great time there. It's a really nice vibe. They've got it's just, I think I've played that festival twice now. Mm. And then they were doing an event as well. I don't know whether they still are, but they were doing one in Brooklyn, New York.
In the warehouse. Yeah, that's crazy, that one.
I think you'll have a lot of fun. It's just a bit of a bitch to get there.
Yeah. Should be fun, though. How can people follow you, buy tickets and all that lot?
I just realized you asked me quite a lot of questions and I didn't really answer any of them. We just went off on a load of them. What have I got coming up? Thanks for asking, bro.
No worries, mate.
So I never answered that question. I've got some shows.
Yeah.
Which you could Google, because Google's pretty clever at that shit and tell you what's going on. I've got some music coming out. I'm trying to figure out the release date for this song with Grimes. So
it's going
to
be big.
I previewed it on my Instagram and it might have been the worst thing I ever did because I have not stopped getting fucking messages about that song ever since and I don't have a release date. It's been pretty bad.
Did they turn up? Did her and Elon turn up?
Oh, no.
Motherfuckers.
So, didn't turn up. But the thing they're going to cut, I think Grimes is going to come to
Shrine.
She wants to come see the track going off.
So. When is the Shrine? When is Shrine?
End of the month, end of August.
What? Do you know the date?
27th and 28th.
I really want to come to one of them. I haven't been to any of your like big shows, so I really want to try and come.
Please come along.
28th.
Will you be free? Will you be free?
I'm in LA the next day playing Day Trip, but I think I've got a show the night before.
Mm.
Let me know. I'll have a look at your dates and I'll try and come to one.
If you're free the week before, I'm playing in San Francisco. At the Frost Amphitheater. Okay. Have you seen that place?
No.
It is beautiful.
Really?
It is absolutely beautiful. 8,000 people in this grassy, the grass-filled amphitheater surrounded by trees. It's beautiful. I cannot wait to play this one.
Yeah, I'll see if I can make it happen. I really want to come to them. They look amazing, man. So congrats.
And then the week before that, probably when this podcast comes out, is the one with Fish in Denver. That'll be
Ballroom, right?
No, it's an outdoor thing. Okay. It's going to be quite big.
So, where is it? Don't worry, Google it, people.
Sorry, I know you're dying of heat.
It's fine.
Fuck it.
Need to lose some weight.
Denver, fuck off, you need to lose some weight. Yeah, maybe you do with all that candy you eat.
I need to sort my training out.
Denver Coliseum.
It's going to be good.
Sounds grand, doesn't it?
It's going to be good.
Denver Coliseum is probably a car park right outside it.
Full of works.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well,
good to catch
thank
up.
Thank you.
No, thank you for coming on.
Splash some cold water on your face.
I'm literally going to, bollock naked.
I'm gonna go and wash the stain out of my
expensive
my top for the protein shake.
Oof. Right, mate, keep safe. Send my love to Geeta. Hope you're well, man.
All right.
Take care.
All right, speak soon. Bye.
And that's a wrap. Thanks for listening. Big ups to Chris for coming on. Have a great week. Keep safe. Don't forget to share. Don't forget to subscribe. Send it to your mates. Send it to your parents, whatever. Keep safe. Have a great one.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.